This is the sort of men are pigs argument, and it's offensive to all heterosexual men.
PR win, great. But real win for the Irish LGBT groups? No, not at all. And we're continuing to insist on full inclusion.
The film is really about this relationship between Lithgow and Melina, and these two men have been together for so long and how they counter this obstacle. But it's also about love and the multi-generations and how we look at love from different points in our life.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Ugandan repression migrates to Gambia. New York St. Pat's Parade organizers greenwash bias. And mature marriage meets separation anxiety in Love is Strange. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michael Laveau.
And I'm Kristen Million.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending September 13, 2014. Lawmakers in Gambia have passed legislation that's reportedly almost identical to Uganda's infamous anti-homosexuality law, which was overturned on a legal technicality earlier this year, but is being reintroduced in Parliament. Gambia's version also enhances existing penalties for gay sex and punishes such private, consensual adult same-gender acts with up to life in prison for repeat offenders, what the measure describes as aggravated homosexuality. The same fate awaits people with HIV and those charged with having sex with someone who's disabled, drugged, or under the age of 18. Homosexual acts in the West African country are already punishable by up to 14 years behind bars. The new measure awaits the signature of Gambian President Yahya Jammeh, who called gay people vermin earlier this year, suggesting that they should be eradicated, just like malaria-carrying mosquitoes. He previously told the United Nations that same-gender attraction is one of the three biggest threats to human existence. In 2008, Jammeh ordered LGBT Gambians to leave the country or face beheading.
Seven men were arrested in Cairo this week for participating in a viral video that's said to show Egypt's first gay wedding ceremony. According to several local news reports, the men were charged with incitement to debauchery, a vague offense frequently used against gay men, and publishing indecent images. The state news agency said that police were still looking for two more men involved in the incident. The statement described the video, which appeared online, as showing a devilish, shameless party where two of the men were getting married. The prosecutor said the video dates back to April. But in an unexpected twist, doctors who reportedly examined the men declared that they all tested negative for homosexuality. While specifics of those examinations were not described, they're thought to have included rectal probes intended to determine if the men had engaged in anal sex with other men. Human rights groups around the world have condemned such procedures as scientifically useless at best and dehumanizing torture at worst. Because of those negative results, however, prosecutors might have to drop the charges against the men. According to the Washington Post, one of the men, who didn't give his name but claimed to be one of the detainees, told an Egyptian call-in radio show that it was all a misunderstanding and that the video simply showed a birthday party where a ring had been offered to the man as a joke. Even though same-gender sex is technically not illegal in the Muslim-dominated country, gay men have been routinely detained under debauchery charges for the past several years. Perhaps the most infamous examples were the arrests in 2001 of more than 50 men in a raid on a Nile River boat night spot who were accused of participating in a gay sex party.
The Australian Football League, or AFL, is said to be reassessing a sponsorship deal with Royal Brunei Airlines because of Brunei's pending new laws that call for gay people to be stoned to death. The Sultan of Brunei, Hassanal Bolkiah, gave approval in April to a revised penal code scheduled to take effect next year that calls for that form of execution for consensual adult same-gender sexual activity. Bolkiah's family has ruled the tiny Southeast Asian country for more than 600 years. The state-owned airline is part of the Sultan's estimated $13 billion fortune. Several luxury hotels he owns in the U.S. and Europe have been the targets of boycotts since the draconian new laws were announced. AFL officials told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation this week that they were unaware of the harsh anti-gay laws when what they called the organization's biggest ever sponsorship deal was signed with Royal Brunei Airlines in July. The revelation is an embarrassment for the Australian Football League, which signed on to a nationwide anti-homophobia in sports campaign earlier this year, and just last week went on record in support of marriage equality.
All eyes will be on the U.S. Supreme Court on September 29th. That's when justices will meet behind closed doors to review appeals of marriage equality rulings from Indiana, Oklahoma, Virginia, Wisconsin, and Utah. Three different federal appeals courts have ruled that bans on civil marriage for same-gender couples in each of those states are unconstitutional. The justices could decide to hear one or more of the cases in their next term, set to begin in October, or they could put off making a decision for a while. The High Court is not obligated to hear any appeal, but pressure has been mounting on the justices to address the contentious issue. Top legal officials in more than half of the United States and virtually every plaintiff couple involved in the marriage equality cases challenging bans in those five states have called on the Supreme Court to resolve the question sooner rather than later. Several religious denominations, led by the Mormon Church, also asked the justices this week to settle the issue once and for all. Marriage equality cases are currently before three other federal appeals courts. A ruling is pending from the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which heard arguments last month in cases from Kentucky, Michigan, Ohio, and Tennessee. The 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals heard a challenge this week to the civil marriage ban in Texas.
A three-judge panel of the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals heard challenges on September 8th to civil marriage bans in Idaho and Nevada and was asked to dismiss a case in Hawaii because the state subsequently enacted marriage equality legislatively. Equality activists predict that the liberal three-judge 9th Circuit panel will rule in favor of opening the institution to gay and lesbian couples. Kate Kendall is the executive director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights, which represented the same-gender couple plaintiffs in the Idaho case. She sat through the lengthy 9th Circuit hearings and commented on what she heard.
I think the arguments made by those opposed to same-sex marriage, and this is what we heard for almost an hour and a half, that if gay couples, if same-sex couples are allowed to marry, that will send the message to heterosexuals, particularly heterosexual men. So this is the sort of men are pigs argument, and it's offensive to all heterosexual men, that if same-sex couples can marry, that will so devalue the institution of marriage that heterosexual men will flee their families in droves and will not provide the proper nurturing and parenting to their children. It's an absurd argument. It's not only offensive to men, but there's no connection between same-sex couples marrying and what happens with heterosexual couples. And I think, fortunately, we're coming to the end of standing around, sitting around in a courtroom, having to listen to these inane arguments in support of what is just simply rank discrimination.
That was Kate Kendall of the National Center for Lesbian Rights. It's unclear when the 9th Circuit ruling will be announced, but it could be soon.
A ruling by the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals this week upheld New Jersey's law prohibiting medical professionals in the Garden State from practicing what's been called conversion or reparative therapy on people under the age of 18 to supposedly make them heterosexual. Virtually every professional mental health organization has called those efforts useless quackery at best and psychologically damaging at worst. The 9th Circuit upheld a similar California law last year. The discredited National Association for Research and Therapy of Homosexuality, or NARTH, and the American Association of Christian Counselors challenged the New Jersey ban in court, claiming it violates their right to free speech by preventing them from discussing such treatment with patients. They also argued that it violates their religious beliefs. Attorneys for the two organizations said that they plan to appeal the ruling to the U.S. Supreme Court.
All but one Republican on the Committee on Veterans Affairs of the GOP-dominated U.S. House of Representatives rejected a bill this week that would have guaranteed equal spousal benefits to the legally wed partners of lesbian and gay veterans. The lone Republican, New Jersey's John Runyon, who's also a co-sponsor of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, joined all 11 Democrats on the panel, but they fell one vote short of passage. Committee Chair Jeff Miller of Florida urged members to reject the proposal in deference to state laws on marriage. The same-gender spouses of active duty service members can receive benefits in all 50 states, but that same treatment is not extended to same-gender spouses of veterans who live in states that don't recognize their marriages. Representative Dina Titus, a Nevada Democrat who introduced the bill, said that it makes no sense that legally married soldiers receive benefits while in the military, but lose those benefits when they become veterans if they live in the wrong place. Sadly, my Republican colleagues chose no.
And finally, as we reported earlier, the National Center for Lesbian Rights, Kate Kendall, ridiculed lawyers who used a heterosexual men are pigs defense to justify state marriage bans. Here are Matt Staver and Matt Barber actually advancing that argument with straight faces, so to speak, on their Faith and Freedom radio show this week.
Same-sex so-called marriage would undercut the norm of sexual fidelity within marriage. One of the biggest threats that same-sex marriage poses to marriage overall is that it would probably undercut the norm of sexual fidelity in marriage. We know that women serve to domesticate men, and that lends itself toward monogamy.
That's the truth.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 13th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Kristen Million.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
Whether you're young, old, or in the middle, we'll all discover how love is strange later in the program.
When Irish eyes are smiling, what is like a morn in spring?
Those smiling Irish eyes started looking shifty with the announcement of a backroom deal intended to cool the controversy over LGBT participation in New York City's famed St. Patrick's Day parade. The battle for inclusion in the parade has been one of the most enduring in the LGBT rights movement. So why are local activists not painting the town green with the news that there'll be an out group in the 2015 event next March? Ann Northrup is a longtime lesbian organizer who's been involved in the ongoing St. Patrick's Day protests. She also co-hosts the weekly Gay USA TV show. Northrup and guest host Chris Cooper discussed the background of the story on their September 4th program and why LGBT activists have serious reservations about the parade committee's action.
This has been going on for more than 20 years, and in fact, started with a bang in 1991 or two when a gay group applied to march. They got turned down. David Dinkins was the mayor. He said, oh, well, that's not right. I'll march with this one little subgroup in the parade, and the gay group can march with us. And they did, and they got beer bottles thrown at them. And Dinkins said, I felt like I was marching in Birmingham, Alabama. And then nobody was allowed to march for years and years and years, and, well, up until the present time. And we had many protests, and when we all got arrested a lot. And the parade redefined itself as a Catholic parade so they could have some kind of authority to keep us out of it. So this morning, to our shock and amazement, suddenly comes this announcement that the St. Patrick's Day organizers have decided that it is okay for an openly gay group to march, and the openly gay group that is going to march is the LGBT employees of NBC. Excuse me? They didn't talk to any of the Irish LGBT groups. Danny Drum, out gay city councilman in New York, called up Brendan Fay this morning of the St. Patrick's for All parade and said, why didn't you tell me you were talking to the St. Patrick's Day parade organizers? And Brendan said, I don't know what you're talking about. He had not heard a word from anybody. He didn't know anything about it. Nobody did, because this is a put-up job between the parade organizers, Cardinal Dolan of the Archdiocese, who is going to be the Grand Marshal of the parade, NBC, which broadcasts the parade, and maybe the mayor. We don't know about the mayor's involvement yet, but we do know that these three have sat down and said, we're getting very bad publicity about this. We now have a mayor who decided not to march this year, de Blasio, because suddenly we have a Democrat in office.
You're forgetting the most important reason.
I'm getting to that. The corporate sponsors are pulling out. Guinness Beer, of all people, pulled out of the parade this year because of this discrimination.
As did Sam Adams and Heineken.
Yes, so that gets their attention. And we were continuing to pound them on the fact that the city was letting cops and firefighters march in uniform in the parade as official representatives of the city. Anybody, you know, they want to march out of uniform in a bigoted parade, be my guest. But to march as official city reps in their uniforms, completely inappropriate. So we're considering a lawsuit on that. Here's my fantasy scenario. Cardinal Dolan says to these parade organizers, you are not putting me at the head of a parade where these protests are continuing. We are going to do something about this. And the parade organizers say, all right, what LGBT group, and I'm sure they didn't call it that, can we get who are not the Irish queers or even Brendan Fay, much more civil? Who can we get who we can put in this parade who looks LGBT but isn't all these ugly people? And lo and behold, they have a corporate sponsor who broadcasts their parade, who have an out employee group, and whose name is out at NBC Universal.
Well, here's the kicker, which is that what they said about all those other groups that are actually Irish and gay and lesbian is, oh, well, other groups can apply in future years.
Yeah, here's what happens when the other groups apply in future years. I'm sorry, we don't have room for you in the parade. We have a limited amount of room for groups, and we are just oversubscribed. So I'm afraid we have no room for you. Here's another strange phrase in their announcement. We are continuing to uphold Catholic teachings. So what does that mean? These LGBT groups that can apply to march, or has the NBC employee group agreed not to be same-sex married or to engage in homosexual activity? Have they signed a pledge agreeing that they are intrinsically disordered? How are we upholding Catholic teachings? A couple of years ago, the NBC president was a grand marshal or something of the Fifth Avenue parade.
Okay.
And Brendan Fay, St. Pat's for All, alternative parade in Queens, calls up the LGBT NBC employee group, the one and the same, and says, you know, this is really bad that your NBC president is the grand marshal of this bigoted parade. Why don't you come march in my parade and, in fact, invite him along to take a little of this sting out of his marching on Fifth Avenue? We can offer you an opportunity to show that you're not bigoted, and you as the out employee group can march in this parade. And you know what they said? No.
Mm. Wow.
No.
That was
and they're the group that is now marching in the Fifth Avenue parade.
That may be why.
Look, point one, we won the PR battle. Point two, this is window dressing and an attempt to whitewash the situation. This is not a real victory.
It'll also be interesting to see what happens in Boston now, because Boston has had the exact same controversy for years. And in fact, it looked like they were going to broker a compromise last year at the last minute. It fell through. And Boston's mayor refused to march in their St. Patrick's Day parade. So it'll be very interesting to see what if there is a ripple effect from this.
And we are still planning, you know, this has just hit today. We are still discussing our strategy on this, because this is, you know, PR win, great. But real win for the Irish LGBT groups? No, not at all. And we are continuing to insist on full inclusion.
And continue they will. Since Ann Northrup and Chris Cooper's September 4th Gay USA broadcast, Irish Queers, the Lavender and Green Alliance, and St. Patrick's for All announced that they're each applying to be in New York City St. Patrick's Day Parade next year, not waiting for possible inclusion in the future. Meanwhile, the Catholic League has withdrawn from the parade because, they say, if even one LGBT group can march, an anti-abortion group should be allowed to march as well. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Cleve Jones, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. An informed community is a strong community.
They got married and lived happily ever after. No, that's not how a new film from writer-director Ira Sachs ends. According to our entertainment correspondent Steve Pride, that's where Love is Strange actually begins.
Ira Sachs's film, Keep the Lights On, was my pick for best LGBT film of 2012, so I was really excited to see his latest offering, Love is Strange, starring John Lithgow, Alfred Molina, Marissa Tomei, and Cheyenne Jackson. And you know what? It doesn't disappoint.
My name is Ira Sachs, and I'm the co-writer and director of Love is Strange. Love is Strange is a film about two men played by John Lithgow and Alfred Molina, who are in a relationship for 38 years. They get married at the beginning of the film, and as a result, one of them loses their job, they both lose their apartment, and they have to temporarily separate, moving into separate homes.
Now, we invited you all here today because, well, your family.
Are you telling us you're getting divorced already?
That's what I thought, too.
No, we have to sell the apartment, and we found a buyer already. So pretty soon, we're going to have to move out. Now, it won't be long before I get another job, and shouldn't be long before we find another apartment, but in the meantime...
It's just a transition phase, probably just a week or two.
We need a place to stay.
One moves in with the two gay cops who live downstairs, and the other with his nephew and wife in Brooklyn. And the film is really about this relationship between Lithgow and Molina, and these two men have been together for so long and how they counter this obstacle. But it's also about love and the multi-generations and how we look at love from different points in our life.
What inspired this movie?
I, in my 40s, fell ready for love, and I think for many different reasons. All my recent films, all my life really previously, love to me had been a steady road downward. As a gay person, I think I'm not unique, and I think we're not unique, in that it took me a long time to like myself. I came out of the closet when I was 16, but I just started creating a lot of other secrets. And secrecy was a real part of how I lived my intimate life. At 40, everything changed, and I really became, for the first time, an honest person trying to reveal as much of myself, not as little. And I think in a way I became ready to love in a different kind of way than I had before. I met my partner, who's now my husband, Boris Torres, who's a painter, and he's a wonderful guy. But that's not really the reason why the relationship works. I think the relationship works because I've changed and I'm more ready. And I wanted to make a film about a relationship between two men in which you could see that there was a possibility for love to blossom with time.
You guys new in the neighborhood?
Are you kidding? There was a famous sip-in right here in this bar to challenge the New York State regulation that prohibited bars from serving homosexuals.
Yeah, we have a clipping from the New York Times framed here somewhere.
1966. Me and four other guys, we came in here accompanied by five reporters. When we were denied service, we denounced the state liquor authority.
Oh my God, you're that guy?
Yeah, I was one of the guys.
Wow. Well, this runs on me, fellas.
You're such a liar.
What?
You'd do anything for a free drink.
Someone said to me, would you be able to make this film 5 years ago? And I thought, no, I couldn't make it, not just because this isn't how I experienced love, but I don't think this relationship is so fully embraced publicly and personally by this community of friends around these two characters. And I think that's something that's really new as well.
What was your takeaway from making this film?
It's not just specific about being gay. I think it's, for me, about being not so young, somewhere in the middle, I hope, of my life. In the middle of one's life, you're aware that it's shorter than you thought and that it's not going to last forever. And I think this film is about an older couple, but it's really about, I think of it as a middle-aged film, to be honest. It's a film about perspective because it's also about this young kid who's 15 years old and discovering love for the first time. It's about Marissa Tomei and Darren Burroughs, who are in the middle of their life questioning what does love look like at that age. And then it's about John and Alfred Molina, who are towards the end, you know, coming towards a different chapter. So for me, there's some humility that this age brings to myself and I think my filmmaking as well.
John Lithgow's portrayal of Ben was so beautiful, and it broke my heart.
What was interesting talking to John about this role as soon as he read the script is he felt that Roberta Muldoon, who's the character in Garp, that this was the character most like himself since Roberta Muldoon. And that Roberta Muldoon, really what he needed to do was reveal himself as an individual in trans role, but not so different than who he was. And that's the case, I think, with the character of Ben, is that John is really playing a version of himself with great comic timing and great talent as an actor.
What do you want audiences to take away from the film?
I want them to be moved, and I want them to be maybe aware more gently of how limited life is. And I want them to be, I always want people to be forgiving of themselves when they see a movie, that somehow they understand themselves better and are a little less harsh. So I hope that they feel an intimacy with these characters and in so learn something about themselves that makes them feel good.
This has been a conversation with Ira Sachs, director and co-writer of Love is Strange. Find out more about this movie online at sonyclassics.com/loveisstrange. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
I see your face in this room full of faces. I'm trying hard not to stare. Strange to see you again. Here of all places. That's him over there.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Michael LeBeau, Kristen Mellion, Cleve Jones, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Nina Simone performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and our generous listeners for making this program possible. Log on to thiswayout.org for news, social media links, and more. Remember, you can hear This Way Out on iTunes and Stitcher. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Richard Chappelle and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WRNC Ashland, Wisconsin, KAZU Pacific Grove, California, 2BAY Byron Bay, New South Wales, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.